Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Here to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Your psychology course on the air, teaching you what we can about the human mind, about people, about how to understand people, and I guess along the way, how to understand yourself as well. Comes this time of year, a very interesting thing happens. We have it's the time of year when there's a highest rate of people being upset. Little wonder. So much expected of people. In the studio with me, Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. Kent, welcome back.
Nice to be back.
Yeah, nice to have you here, always. You're a great contributor to the program, to the station. And also with us on air by the magic of telephone, Dr. Michael B. Schachter, who is the author of What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Depression. We're going to address the issue of holiday depression with him as well. Dr. Schachter, are you with us yet?
I sure am.
Oh, good. Glad to have you there. Holiday season comes along. A number of things happen to people. A lot of factors that affect people. Here we are, three people in the mental health profession. We deal with it all the time. Highest rate of suicide is at this time of year. Biggest number of, I guess people feel so much despair. And I was noticing the other day the biggest division between the rich and the poor, so the people who are the poorest suffer even more nowadays, not having any place to go, not having any, not having the wherewithal to kind of provide the things that they're seeing out there that look so good. But I want to start off with the basics and start off with Dr. Schachter. Dr. Schachter, you would do a thing called complementary medicine, do you not?
I do, sir.
I thought complementary medicine is where you give somebody a pill, and the pill turns around and says, oh, how nice you look this morning.
That's with an I rather than with an E.
Oh, that's a different complementary.
That's exactly right.
What is complementary medicine?
Well, it goes by varying terms. Complementary medicine is meant to complement conventional medicine. People who focus on doing a wide variety of things outside of conventional medicine, which focuses more on medication, surgery, radiation, those kinds of things, and not so much on lifestyle, nutrition, nutritional supplements, herbal supplements, acupuncture, other kinds of energy medicine. Those things were all, if you put that into a category, some people call that alternative medicine or alternative health care. And if you try to integrate them in some way, then you come up with the notion of complementary medicine, where a person who is trained and has some wherewithal in conventional medicine tries to integrate these alternative practices into his treatment of patients.
I saw from one of the people who had written an introduction to your book, not an introduction, Majid Ali. You know Dr. Majid Ali?
I do.
Oh, Majid has a program on WBAI on the very station that you're on right now. In fact, he has a program right before ours, and we're very familiar with his work. So let's talk about your work with depression. You also a psychiatrist?
I am. I'm a board-certified psychiatrist, and I started in pretty much in conventional psychiatry way back in I finished my residency in 69, and I began doing the complementary care starting probably around 1974-75. So I've been in it for over 30 years.
So you're doing the form of psychiatry a lot of people request. They want to get the orthomolecular stuff. That's what you do, or you don't do the psychiatry anymore. You do the general medicine.
Well, that's a good question. I was one of the original people involved in orthomolecular psychiatry. I mean, not back in the 50s with Hoffer, but in the 70s. And so I did do and still do orthomolecular psychiatry. But in addition to that, over the years, I have actually started seeing, I've seen patients with all kinds of problems. So we do a lot of work with cardiovascular disease and chelation therapy. We do.
But specifically, psychiatry is not your focus of practice.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say it's I have a certain percentage of my cases are psychiatry as well. If you mean psychotherapy, at my center I have people doing psychotherapy, but I myself am not doing psychotherapy.
And what kind of people do the psychotherapy at your center? Are they actual psychotherapists? Are they psychiatrists? You're
actually
in New York,
the one that we have working here at the moment is and has been here for several years, is both a psychologist in terms of his degrees in Europe, and he is a social worker degrees here.
Okay.
So he's a combination psychologist and social worker.
All right. So you do some psychological work. Let's talk about the psychological work since you have some background in it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the primary cause of the seasonal depression that comes around New Year's and Christmas?
Well, I think there are a lot of psychological forces, and there are also probably some biochemical sources as well. I think in terms of the psychological sources, you know, this is a time of year where there's a big contrast between people who have family and get together and, you know, those who are feeling very positive about the holiday season and those who perhaps have had problems with family, do not have good family relationships, may not have good socioeconomic situation where they are able to enjoy some of the material things around Christmas and other holiday seasons. So I think that that's probably part of the psychological part of it. And then, of course, we have the biological part of it where the seasons, the days get shorter, and there is much less light during the time. People do not get as exposed to as much sunlight, and you get into problems with reduction in melatonin levels that can cause sleep problems, and you get reduction in vitamin D, which appears to be becoming more and more important. It's the so-called sunshine vitamin, and that's seems to be becoming very important in a wide variety of conditions, including depression.
Seems to be becoming more and more important, or seems to be getting a lot more and more attention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's becoming, because I don't, you know, I mean, a lot more people are focusing on vitamin D as a source of depression, going along with now people taking huge amounts of vitamin D supplements, and other people recommending tanning beds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as places of finding vitamin D. Are you recommending that people sun themselves?
I haven't been recommending that because I haven't really looked in carefully enough to see whether, you know, what might be the long-term side effects of that. So I haven't really
of which,
done that.
The
of the tanning. Of the tanning. I do recommend vitamin D supplements because there seems to be pretty good studies done now on a variety of conditions, including things like cancer, where low vitamin D levels do predispose you to a variety of illnesses and problems. And part of this, I think, is iatrogenic, that meaning doctor-caused, because there's been such an emphasis over the last several years of the sun being harmful and causing skin cancer. And a lot of the dermatologists seem to indicate, you know, the less sun, the better. Michael Hollick wrote a book, The UV Advantage, which takes a different tact. He's a PhD, MD up in the Harvard area, and he wrote this book saying that, you know, we don't want people to burn themselves in the sun, but an optimal amount of sunlight is essential for health and is necessary to raise vitamin D levels and improve health in general. So
One wonders if part of the reason that that running became so much of a sport and so much of an accepted form of exercise is not so much for the cardiovascular exercise as for the fact that it got people outdoors.
Well,
you know, that I mean, people finally got outdoors, got out of their houses, and they were in the sun so much more.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that is a major part of that. Of course, you do get an increase in endorphins, which are kind of happy substances that the body and the brain secrete, which makes people feel better, and those endorphins also play a role in improving mood, and that accompanies the exercise, aerobic exercise, too. But
and,
I think
and
there's
the
no
vitamin D.
And the vitamin D. And I think there's no doubt. Yeah, an interesting thing here also is this whole issue of melatonin, which is a substance the brain produces to help you to sleep and stay asleep during the night. And what happens is it seems to be a relationship that you make your melatonin and you store it during the day, and being exposed to sunlight seems to help that. But then at night it's released in the dark. But it's actually the sunlight during the day that helps you to store the melatonin in the first place.
People who don't sleep well, do you think they're somehow showing a reaction to a lack of vitamin D?
I think that it could very well play a role. I don't know if there have been any studies on this, but I would absolutely not be surprised. I know my own personal experience, if I'm on vacation and I spend several hours outside, in a place where there's plenty of sun, I definitely sleep better at night. And I'm sure there are other variables, too, in that. But I do think that being outside and being in the sunlight, being by the seashore and so on, during the day usually will help most people to sleep at night.
When people think of taking vacations, they do think of going to the sunlight.
That's right.
You know, and they kind of naturally gravitate towards it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think of taking a vacation in Norway.
That's right.
Kent?
Well, I think that, the book is very good, Dr. Schechter. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And there, he talks in there about light therapy and the evidence that there are a whole group of people that they have a syndrome called seasonal affective disorder that seems to be really triggered by the decreased amount of light that goes on in the winter, obviously dovetailing right with the holiday blues that we're talking about. So, and it is shown that light therapy can be very effective for people who have that disorder. It seems like the shortening amount of light affects melatonin and other neurotransmitter and neurohormones is the problem, and exposure to light seems to be a mood elevator.
Right. I think, and people, these boxes, these so-called light boxes, are mm-hmm. not that expensive, and people who seem to have this problem during the day, you know, can purchase a light box. And
I've never seen a person get better from a light box. I've seen people get better from tanning beds, and I don't recommend tanning beds, but I've seen people who have said, I go to a tanning bed and I felt 100% better, and I don't recommend them because, like you, I don't know the dangers. But the light boxes, they just, no, I don't, do you, have you?
I have.
You actually had a patient
who's put
their head in a box?
Yeah, I have also. I have seen some people who say that definitely has helped them.
Because the idea is that the human beings may have a little bit of a hibernation. You know, it's not just Yogi Bear, that may have a tendency to kind of be kind of sluggish and to overeat and sleep too much. And those aspects that may be genetically pretty clear in a lot of other mammals, like Yogi Bear and other you know, creatures, that human beings may have a little bit of that, and there is a tendency to sort of be less active, to oversleep, to overeat, and for lots of people I know, that causes a source of depression and low self-esteem within the winter months, as they're not getting things done that they like, their energy's low, they're overeating. And it does seem that light is something that can somewhat help that perhaps biological tendency to go into almost a hibernation mode.
Well, let me ask you, Dr. Schechter, imagine a closet. And imagine a closet with two floodlights in it, or a bathroom that had a floodlight on the ceiling. And in that floodlight, you put 150-watt light balanced, like a Verilux or something that is balanced for daylight.
Mm-hmm.
How much exposure do you think you'd need in that bathroom to get you enough sufficient to be the equivalent of 1 hour out in the day, out in daylight?
You know, I don't have those numbers in my head, but I know that the amount of lux in sunlight, you know, at noon is very, very high. But apparently, you know, some of these, I don't know if what the situation that you're describing would be equivalent to a light box, but I mean, there have been some pretty some controlled studies that have shown that the light box, you don't need to be in there all day long, you know, usually about 45 minutes to an hour exposure in the morning is what most people would need, and that seems to carry them through the day.
We're sitting in a studio right now. We've got five floodlights around us, 150 watts. We put in natural lighting here. We sit in here 1 hour a day. We should be able to...
And you're not depressed at all.
Well, no, none of us are depressed in here. This is it. It's going to become the cure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think you're getting to the fact that what you want to do is during the shortened daylight hours in the winter, you want to extend the amount. So during the day, you're pretty good if you have seasonal affective disorder. These light boxes are supposed to be in the morning. I've read some evidence even at night is helpful. You're trying to artificially fake the brain out that there's actually more light during the course of the day. So once the sun is up, you're good to go somewhat, but starting a little bit earlier before the sun comes up and after the sun goes down is really what they recommend trying to get light. I tell patients, yes, get up early in the morning and put all the lights on. Don't, maybe there's a tendency to be groggy and keep the lights low and be cranky and whatever, but fight that temptation and blast all the lights in your apartment as much as one can to artificially expose your brain to light before the sun does it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. This is Armand DeMille with WBAI 99.5 FM. We're here with the Positive Mind, Dr. Robert Shaw and Dr. Michael Schachter. Do you know Dr. Neil Schachter by chance?
No.
Mount Sinai, head of the pulmonary division. He was one of our guests the other day.
Oh, no, I
felt like
know.
We were having a whole family. Same spelling, too.
A lot of Schachters in medicine for some reason.
A lot of Schachters in medicine.
Yeah.
One asks why.
I don't know.
Well, maybe it's the gene pool. Let's talk about the gene pool for a minute. Chromosome 11. You know, we talk about D4DR, you know, that says there are these short genes and these long genes and that some people are going to suffer when some people are not going to suffer, and it's just the way it is. And if you got the longer genes, you may suffer from shortened light, and if you got the shorter genes, you may not. And so for those of you out there who are saying, you know, this light is no problem for me, I get by, whereas my brother or sister, they don't get by. It could be as easy as just little snipping of the genes that are different for everybody. And so there are a number of things that you could do. Yes, we have heard enough about diet and exercise, right? We know it. Don't eat bad food, right? And exercise. We know that part. We know vitamin D is getting a little more important. What form vitamin D, by the way, Doc?
You mean as a D2 or D3? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, D2, D3.
Well, in general, D3.
D4, D, you know.
Well, D3, I think, is the most physiological, probably.
And so what form should be taken? What do people take as a supplement?
Vitamin D. It'll say vitamin D or vitamin D3. I usually mostly use the D derived from cod liver oil or from some, from fish liver sources. But there are also other hypoallergenic vitamin Ds for people who have problems with that. And they have them in varying concentrations. I mean, it used to be that you never saw anything above 400 units. Now you can easily go into a health food store and get 1,000 units. Carlson's makes 2,000 units. There's another company that makes 5,000 units. And you can even get, by prescription, 50,000 unit vitamin Ds, where you would only take that a couple of times a week. But there are certain levels that you want to reach, and I find that most conventional docs are not measuring these vitamin D levels, even though we measure them on virtually every patient that comes in, and rarely see anybody in the optimal vitamin D range. Rarely.
All right, now you've got a center up in, where is your place?
We're in Rockland County.
You're in Rockland County, right, and Majid Ali is down here in New York. I think it was Majid yesterday. I saw Majid yesterday, and he said, cod liver oil, Armand, cod liver oil. He said, don't forget about it. He said, it's important. It'll help you with a bunch of things.
That's true, because you have the vitamin A, you have the vitamin D, and you have the omega-3 fatty acids in cod liver oil, all of which are very beneficial for a variety of medical problems and certainly for psychiatric situations.
But it makes me hate when I burp.
Well, that's why you there are other forms you can take where you don't burp. But some people do have problems with that, and sometimes taking it with some enzymes may help. Sometimes, changing the form that you're taking it in.
So let's go just a step further here. If we have seasonal affective disorder, that's one thing: lights, vitamins, exercise. what else can we do for people? I mean, that's this they know, right? If most people were able to exercise and eat right, they probably wouldn't be depressed anyway. So it isn't like you take a depressed person who's got nothing left for themselves but their McDonald's hamburger or their little bit of food or whatever they're eating. You know, this is the only thing that makes them feel good, and their TV, and say, ah, let's take that away from you, mm-hmm. right? And then we say to them, and now, instead of letting you sit at home and watch TV, which feels good, we're going to get you out running, right? So now we make them even more upset. And now we say, you know, and now you're lonely. We're going to force you out into the streets and make you do volunteer work. I mean, this is very good for anybody who's healthy. They could take this healthy regimen. What do we do for folks who feel like they can't get motivated?
Well, what we try to do in the book is to address certain areas that really haven't been addressed very much in general. The tendency, I think, for most psychiatrists today is to use medication very readily and not look at some of the things. Now, you've mentioned several things, but there are other things that we could look at, too. For example, depending on person's genetics and stress and so on, we may be able to target specific, either by symptoms or sometimes with the help of testing, we do a test with measure neurotransmitters in the urine, and as long as that's interpreted with regard to symptoms at the same time, you can figure out the pattern of what specific neurotransmitters are low, and then you can target, you could give specific amino acids that are the precursors that make these neurotransmitters and give that as part of a supplement program, and some patients find that to be make a tremendous amount of difference in a relatively, and sometimes in a relatively short period of time. So that's one of the areas that I think needs attention and can be looked at, because that's something as easy as, you know, swallowing a pill and maybe able to start getting the people motivated.
But it's not that simple. I mean, it means you go up to suffering, you know, And you finally get up there and you find out you've got this doctor's center that doesn't take your insurance. You got to lay out a lot of money, and you lay out the money, and then you go pee in a jar, and then you hope you get your results back. And when you get them back, the doctor says to you, okay, now take these things, these enzymes, and because we found out your neurotransmitters aren't working, and maybe it'll help you. And you sit there and you wait for that to work. It's so hard to find anybody motivated to give this another try, when it's just try after try after try, because there are so many promises out there that don't work. Is there a money-back guarantee if it doesn't work?
Well, I don't think anybody gives money-back guarantees.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Do you?
Yeah, sure we do. If people aren't happy with what they get here, we give them money back.
Oh, if people are not happy with what they get here, they get their money back, too. But
sure, let's make that as a statement. Anybody who goes to the Schachter Center, money-back guarantee.
Well, that's not a money-back guarantee. There's a difference between that and between if somebody is very unhappy with something. But in any event, it's not enzymes, by the way, that you're taking. You're taking targeted amino acids, because that's what makes these neurotransmitters. So, for example, dopamine, the precursor would be tyrosine or phenylalanine. Or for serotonin, you would want to use tryptophan or 5-hydroxytryptophan. So you need to know those specific things, and you need to know the pathways, and you need to know what specific vitamins or minerals are needed for that particular problem, for that, and to try to balance them. So that's one area that is useful. Another area that can be useful is hormonal balancing, and we find that there are a lot of people who, for example, have a low thyroid symptoms, and there are a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of toxicity around fluoride and bromine and other halogens which can interfere with the iodine that's necessary to for the thyroid to function properly. And often people will have normal thyroid blood tests but will still be functionally hypothyroid. The hypothyroid would be someone who's sluggish, who feels depressed, who has difficulty motivating and getting themselves going, and yet their blood tests come back normal. And the reason for this, so there are several reasons, but one is that they may have trouble converting their inactive thyroid hormone, which is what the thyroid produces, to the active form, T4 to T3, and that doesn't always show up in the thyroid blood test. So sometimes giving a therapeutic trial of thyroid hormone may help people to improve symptoms like being cold, difficulty losing weight, feeling depressed, having difficulty motivating themselves and so on. So we look at hormonal levels, we look at the adrenals, we look at the thyroid, we look at imbalances in sexual hormones for women, for example. Many women are what we call estrogen dominant. They have too much estrogen or too little progesterone or a combination of the two. And either through herbs or nutrients or sometimes bioidentical hormones, that's a concept that Suzanne Summers has been touting a lot lately. These are other areas that we look at in terms of trying to help people out of depression. Another area is toxicity. For example, we check all of our patients for mercury levels, because a lot of people who are trying to be very healthy and they eat lots of fish, and it turns out that when we check their mercury levels, their blood levels of mercury are quite high, and that can be contribute to mood disorders, irritability, and so on. So these are just some of the areas. And
are you suggesting that people have their fillings pilled and have amalgams put in and take out those
Have
the amalgams taken out?
Right. I think that in some cases, yes, that can be important. There's a fair amount of work now that make it very clear that these amalgam fillings leak, and it's a question of degree, not a question of if.
Boy, all that stuff from the past, you know, we should have listened to the cod liver oil, but ignored all the stuff about the...
Can I bring up, you're talking about thyroid, and I'm often struck by the fact when I meet a patient who's depressed, and I ask them about whether they've had their thyroid level checked, they'll say yes, because I just went to the doctor last year or so.
Right.
So the reality is that for many of you in the listening audience, if you're depressed and you've been to a medical doctor, they don't check the thyroid levels, even the most simple, basic checking of it, let alone some of the more complicated ones where they check for T3, T4, and TSH, which is a kind of a subtle way to get to test for a thyroid that's a little sluggish. Tell everyone who's depressed that make sure that they've had a thyroid function test done, because I'm surprised at the number of people that have never had that even basic test done. And as Dr. Schachter is saying, that low thyroid without a doubt can mimic symptoms of depression very, very much.
Yes, well, I would say I would absolutely support what you're saying, but the problem is that a very high percentage of people actually show up normal on the blood tests, and yet they have and what happens is they go and they complain of these symptoms, and the primary care doctor may say, you know, it sounds like you may have a low thyroid. They do the blood tests, the tests come back normal, and the patient has said, no, your thyroid's fine, it's not a problem. Go see a psychiatrist, get put on an SSRI or, you know, Prozac or Paxil or one of those, when in fact they can have a normal blood test in their thyroid. But, you know, the active form of thyroid hormone is called T3, triiodothyronine, and that is made at the peripheral level, in other words, the tissue level. It's made from T4, which is what the thyroid produces. Now, if you have high enough T4 in your blood, your TSH and your T4, and so they're all going to be normal. But at the tissue level, the T3 may be low, but you don't actually measure that on a blood test very well. You can measure free T3, but even that is not 100%, because it can still be at the tissue level and not in the bloodstream. So that's where checking, for example, basal temperatures, people who are cold all the time and they check their basal temperatures, instead of being like 98.6, they're running 97 or 96.5. Those people probably, there's an interference with their thyroid. Their thyroid is not functioning. It could be due to certain mineral deficiencies like selenium or zinc or copper or tyrosine. All of these things are necessary for making thyroid hormones, or iodine. There could be toxicity that's interfering with the thyroid functioning, such as the mercury levels, such as, for example, fillings in the mouth, or people who eat lots of tuna fish may wind up actually with very high mercury levels in their bloodstream, and you have to begin to start to cut back on the fish and chelate out those mercury levels. You actually can give chelating agents, either nutritional or actually medications that help
to remove
that.
Now there goes the tuna fish. Listen, we're going to have to take a short station break, and when we come back, Dr. Schachter, stick with us. We're going to talk about the medications that are prescribed and some of the mistakes that are made with the medication. Can you stay with us?
Oh, sure, I will.
Okay, you're going to be hearing a music interlude, and then right after the music, we'll be back with you. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be right back.
So how are that, man?
Just walk on.
Well, let's go.
How they started the first running club. Just keep on walking till I find my way back home. Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee from an album called Blending the Blues. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We've got Dr. Schachter on the phone with us. Dr. Michael Schachter, unlike Dr. Neil Schachter, who wrote a book with Deborah Mitchell called What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Depression. And then we also have in the studio the very doctor who may not tell you these things, Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. Because, you know, one of the things that happen to people when they get depressed, especially around this time of year, is sometimes they just can't afford psychotherapy and counseling and going up to go through a very expensive process that's not necessarily reimbursed by insurance, or they don't, not covered by Medicare, and what are they going to do? And they call me up and they say, look, I'm deeply depressed and I can't do things and I'm not a physician, so I don't make recommendations, and they can't go many places, and so they call Dr. Kent Robert Shaw, and he does some of the most generous psychiatry of anybody I know in New York. He cuts his fees, he helps people out, And he sees people, and sometimes he'll prescribe medication because there's no alternative, right, Kent? What do you...
Yeah, I think that, again, the science of depression is that there are certainly some population of people that benefit a great deal from antidepressants. So that I think that much of the alternative medicine is very helpful for lots of people, and certainly a lot of the positive lifestyle changes. But I think the science also suggests that certain people, due to perhaps genetic imbalances and family history to support, that they do well on some of the medications that are prescribed.
Well, Dr. Schachter says, but no, some of those mistakes, some of those prescriptions are a mistake. Tell him, Dr. Schachter, tell him, straighten him out.
Well, first of all, let me say, I do not condemn the use of medication in the book, and say that it can be used and should be used in some cases. My inclination, though, and my bias is to try to do whatever I can without medication, and then I use the I kind of save the medication in situations where things are not working out as well as I would like. Some of the treatment that I mentioned earlier, having to do with these targeted amino acids to raise neurotransmitters, to an extent, that's how some of these medications work. Well, they work by raising some of the neurotransmitters. So, for example, serotonin, let's say. You have these drugs called specific serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, like Paxil and Prozac and Zoloft, which will tend to block the reuptake of serotonin. Serotonin is secreted from one neuron to the next and stimulates it, and then most of it usually goes back into the original neuron to be used again. And what these drugs do is they prevent that reuptake into the first neuron, and therefore they keep a higher concentration in the synapse and will then give you an effect of serotonin, a higher effect of serotonin. And as Dr. Shaw says, in many cases this can be very, very helpful and sometimes even miraculous almost for some patients. Part of the problem that occurs, though, is that when you use these medications long-term, you increase them in this synapse, this connection between the two neurons, but you also increase the metabolism of them. And over a period of time, we find, for example, that some of these patients may become depleted in serotonin over time, and that if you combine the use of medication with the targeted amino acid to raise the serotonin by having the neurons make more out of tryptophan or 5-hydroxytryptophan, 5-HTP, you actually can help this person whose antidepressant may have stopped working. So they can be used synergistically and can be used together. Dealing with some of these alternative things while giving medication, I think, is a very positive thing, and absolutely see nothing wrong with it. I do tend to think, though, that the medications tend to be used too frequently and too often, and that there isn't sufficient attention paid to the common side effects associated with them. So that, for example, many people who take some of these antidepressants will develop sexual side effects. They'll have problems with either their sexual drive or their sexual functioning. And this can be related to these medications, and often patients are not aware of that. Also, another problem with them is that sometimes it is difficult to get off these medications, because even though they're supposed to not have any withdrawal effects, in my experience, and I think there's a lot of articles on it also indicating that people can get rather severe withdrawal side effects when you stop the medication suddenly. And then the person thinks, well, I really need the medication, because look at what happens to me when I go off it, especially when they try to go off it on their own, not under medical supervision.
All right, we're talking with Dr. Michael Schachter, author of the book, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Depression. Also in the studio with us is Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM. But here's what I see from what you're saying, and I've gone through your book. If someone were to take your book and they take a look and they say, okay, no, they agree with all three of us, they're saying, oh, if you could get out of your depression by yourself without any medications, We want you to do that. All three of us say that. Nobody here is saying we want you to take medication. It's the only way to get out. But if you can't get out by yourself and you want to try a natural way, we have one or two recommendations we could make you. They're minor ones. You know, get out in the sun a little bit, stand out in the sun. But then the rest of your book talks about finding the different levels for the neurotransmitters and different things you could do, vitamin D, all about testing. Now, that all costs money, and that's expensive. Now, if a person says, well, what do? I got no money, but I'm depressed, and I'm at home. What do I try? The book doesn't tell me how much of what to take.
Well,
there's
actually,
where we run into a fix. If you go to a physician, if it's in-network, if you have your... If you have your hospital indemnity program, if you have some kind of Medicare, you go to a psychiatrist and he says, "All right, take Zoloft." That's the best you're going to get for nothing, for your no monies, you know. And a lot of people have no money. And I'm asking you, Dr. Schachter, what could they do with no money?
Well, first of all, I disagree with your premise that all you can do is get some sunlight and exercise, because there's a lot of advice in there. Now, I'm not talking about very seriously depressed people, who certainly should be under some kind of medical or psychiatric care, but I'm talking about with the milder or even moderate forms. You have a lot of clues given in the book that do not necessarily require testing. There are certain patterns that you can look for, and certain supplements that you can take, and we do actually give certain, you know, ranges of recommendations, and the whole idea is always to start low and go slow on anything you do along those lines. But people can certainly take some vitamin D. People can take essential fatty acids like omega-3 fish oil capsules. But some people, that makes a really big difference. They can even take some of these amino acids as precursors, and they can experiment around a little bit. Unfortunately, I mean, it is true that these supplements cost money.
They're prohibitively expensive.
Well,
absolutely.
Compared to medications, they're not. But the medications are frequently covered by insurance.
That's right. The medications are covered by insurance, and,
right,
and the supplements are not.
Right.
Unless you know of somebody who is, as a gift of owning some kind of an agency, is giving away supplements for poor people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of anybody who's doing it. I don't know of any agencies that are saying, and for the people who can't afford it, we make this available.
Well, I don't either. I haven't really looked into that. There may be some, but I'm not sure if there are or there aren't. There are people, plenty of people with plenty of money that are still depressed and having a hard time also. Money doesn't guarantee that you're going to solve the problem, but not having money certainly adds a lot to it, because you're very limited in terms of some of the things that you could try along these lines.
Well, Kent wanted to say something about depression. Kent, you wanted to say about the...
Well, I think two things that he was saying about medication I wanted to actually agree with. One was that I think that people need to look at sometimes paradoxically that you'll have an initially good response with one of these antidepressants. And then studies would show that after 6 months or a year, sometimes there can be some subtle sort of thing. So even though a medication may have increased your energy and cleared up your thinking, it's very possible that after 6 months or so of a medication that there's now some sluggishness in one's thinking or some weight gain or the like that is now coming after long-term use. And obviously the sexual side effects we've talked a lot about in this show as a very prominent side effect with these antidepressants. And secondly, the withdrawal, particularly the shorter-acting ones, Paxil, Effexor, yes, it's horrible. You can't stop these antidepressants quickly. You should do it slowly, and absolutely you'll misinterpret the withdrawal symptoms inaccurately as a return of anxiety, particularly a need for the medication.
Someone sent me an email today that said, you know, she was taking one of these SSRIs, she said, but when she took ginseng along with the SSRI, she felt her whole sexual thing swing back, as opposed to losing it. And it's the kind of thing that Dr. Schachter is saying. You just got to find out what works with what.
Yeah, I think also that we in the psychiatry profession, we're not being honest about some of the facts that Dr. Schechter is saying about your body does get somewhat physically used to these medications. One of the things that just strikes me, for example, is we tell 14 and 15 and 16 year olds not to misuse amphetamines and how that will affect your brain and affect the brain chemistry and the like. And then an hour later, somebody will be on 60 milligrams of Ritalin, which is a stimulant. So,
exactly.
You know, there seems to be some weird self-serving sort of paradox in psychiatry that the medication, the stimulant we like you to take, has no problem on the growing brain, but the bad and abusive one has some damage. I tend to err and think that they both have damage, the misusing of amphetamines as well as the high dose of amphetamines that so many people are getting as adolescents.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think that there's a total disconnect here, and these things are affecting the brain, and they are doing things long term, and even the nutrients and so on. I mean, we don't have, you know, it's very hard to even know the full extent of even the high doses of the effects of that long term. But in general, I tend to think that if you can use something that is, either found in your food or made by the body, which is something not foreign to the body, it is less likely to cause long-term side effects than the introduction of medications which are really chemicals that have been introduced into this planet for the first time. My friend and colleague Jonathan Wright from the state of Washington uses these terms, alien substances, you know, because they're really substances that are not found on Earth. Once you start making medications and you have to tweak them and make them different from anything else in order to be able to patent them, you're using substances that are not necessarily found in the biological realm. And as a result, I think you're increasing the risk of those things. And again, not that I'm saying they never should be used or anything like that, but I think you want to be really cautious with it. And if you can eventually get people carefully and slowly and carefully off medications, I would tend to favor using natural substances whenever possible.
We're all in agreement. Thank you, Dr. Michael Schechter, author of What Your Doctor May Not Tell You. About depression, new book just came out. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Right. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you. Bye.
And so that's that. As we're coming along here, back with Kent Roberts. Sure, you know, Kent, I mean, you know, the worst part about depression is everybody thinks they're the only ones.
Yeah, I think Dr. Schechter was saying initially about the psychological aspect of this time of the year, about, you know, for those
this time
for the holiday times, for those of you who have family problems, well, that's about 96% of New Yorkers. So, you know, join the club of family dysfunction, and you have a right to sing the blues, because yes, this time of the year there's lots of interactions with your family that brings up all sorts of expectations that we should be the little house in the prairie or the Brady Bunch around the Christmas tree or the Hanukkah, and it's just those expectations are partly leading to people's feelings of depression, because they have some fantasy everyone else is smiling and giving big wet kisses and hugs and happy, whereas in fact lots of people are just, it's one other day, you know, holidays, and there's all sorts of interactions with family members that can be very difficult, about power plays amongst family members and perfectionistic and expectations with different family members. And for many of you, think about past holidays, and maybe, you know, the unconscious part of us, you know, thinks about some pretty unpleasant holidays in the past, and we go into this season with some anxiety about, you know, the horrible Christmas tree that Uncle Joe drunkenly threw down the stairs, you know, 30 years ago. So it doesn't have happy memories.
Another thing that happens around this time of year is if you had something in your life last year that you don't have this year, like a pet, like a mate, you know, it kind of makes it a little more difficult. What do? You know, sometimes it's not so stupid. You grit your teeth and you just get through the season. I know a lot of people who do that. You know, I know a lot of people who just say, I hope it's over, I hope it's over, I hope it's over, I hope it's over. They can't wait till December 26th. so that, you know, the Christmas music stops, but it doesn't stop because it continues because they're still selling items. And then, you know, January 2nd, and then the trees being thrown out, that for some people it's a bah humbug because it's all a symbol of this mood that they feel. And fine, if that's the way you do it, that's the way you do it, friends. Remember, there are people out there with the short jeans and the long jeans, and some people are going to take it on the chin, and other people are going to say, I could roll with it, you know, I can handle it. To the people who can't handle it, you don't have to cheer them up. You don't have to make them feel better. It's not your job to take somebody who doesn't feel good at this time of year and make them feel good. No. Best thing you could do for people is to kind of look at them, recognize them, acknowledge them for the way they feel, and be with them. That's why I like volunteer work. That's why I like soup kitchens. Soup kitchens are not so important for the fact that you're serving people food. Soup kitchens are important because you're kind of serving food, but you're also saying to people, to you, for who you are, I'm here. That's all. I'm here. I'm here, you're here, you be who you are, and I'm here. And there's something about people recognizing you. I spoke to a woman earlier today. I said, if you could find a man who could give you what you want, what would he give you? She said, I would hope that he would recognize me, and said, what would he see? And she said, he would see that sometimes I'm little and sometimes I'm scared and sometimes I'm not so powerful and sometimes I get worried. And I said, and what would he do then? She said, oh, he would do nothing. He would do absolutely nothing about it. He would just know that I felt this way and he wouldn't have to feel like he had to fix it. She said, that would be my kind of man. Not a man who has to fix it. She said, otherwise I have to hide my feelings all the time. So mind you, if you're somebody who fixes things all the time, the very person who may need you the most may be hiding from you because they don't want you to take on the burden. So part of what you could do around Christmas time, part of what you could do around this season is to lay back a little, friends. You know, lay back. If you're if you're somebody who helps all the time, lay back a little. Help by just being present. If you're somebody who needs help, just stand around people. Stand around. You don't have to do very much. You'd be amazed at how much there is there, how much niceness there is out there. But do get out into the daylight. I'm beginning to believe the theory. I mean, I know I'm a junkie for the sunlight. Sometimes I feel like, you know, sometimes I watch these animals, you know, who get out and they stare at the sun and they just put their heads up and they look at the light and I wonder why they're doing it. I feel like one of those, you know, I've got to get that sunlight somewhere on my body for some reason or other. And I figure, oh, it must be because my name is Demelanin or something. There must be something about me that has this thing, but I'm a receptor, so I'm a believer. Get out in the daylight just because you got to absorb a certain amount of it. You know, you better do it before the next planet disappears. Pretty soon they're going to make Mars, you know, just a miniature planet. And they're going to take away the moon and never know what. Then they're going to take away tuna fish and force you to eat cod liver oil. And you know the way the Earth is going. So I will be back with you. Hi, Kent.
Hi. Right,
you're watching me do this one, right?
Yeah, you're winding it down.
I'm winding it down. I thank you. You know, Kent, I thank you for all your help this year with people. You've been real generous with the people at WBAI, and you've been real helpful. And great to have you here, part of WBAI and the Positive Mind. I want to thank you.
Nice to be part of the family.
Very nice. And to you, Stephanie Dombra, for your help as assistant in this production. And to all the other people down at WBAI, I'll be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. Let's pick up the mood a little bit with Samba Luku Samba. If you want a copy of today's program, you can go to the website, thepositivemind.com, you can go to WBAI.org. That's the best place to go. But if you don't succeed there, go to thepositivemind.com. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends.
Some days I wanna